Blog Talk Radio.
Peace be on our honorable and noble listening audience. You are listening once again to another edition of Religion Means Live. I'm your host, Imam Alfred, the host of Religion Means Alive, and we're waiting for our dear brother and dear friend, Brother Akbar McIntyre, the great city of Paterson, New Jersey. As soon as he is checked in with the show, we will have him on. We're making the connections now. As soon as he's on the show, we will be in touch with him. We are very interested and what is going on in Paterson, New Jersey. Paterson, New Jersey is a very, 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 very extraordinarily important place in the history of African Americans and our migration to New Jersey. Many of the people in Paterson are from the Virginia, New York area. And we're going to discuss, along with Alfred Muhammad II, the state of Paterson, New Jersey. However, we're also going to discuss the massive violence and the rise of the Ku Klux Klan in Paterson. He said, what do you mean the rise of the Ku Klux Klan in Paterson? Well, it's the Ku Klux Klan redux. It is kin killing kin. So that's the new version of the Ku Klux Klan. We're waiting for him to appear with us. And as soon as he's with us, Alfred, is he scheduled to come on? Okay. Please tell him to come on now. We're ready, waiting for him. Yeah, we don't want any air time. Dead air, as they call it in the business. So we're waiting for the brother to come on. Brother Akbar McIntyre, are you with us? Yes. The state of African America is a very extraordinarily serious state. It is a state worth over $2.1 trillion is spent by us, where a large population of our people are in the federal, state, and local prison. 30% have contact with the criminal justice system. And we have 40 million people. There's something wrong with that picture. There's something wrong with the picture of a Michael Brown being killed by law enforcement. Something wrong with the picture of Freddie Gray being killed. But there's something wrong about what the name of the young boy in Paterson that was just killed on his way from a basketball practice. Something wrong with a young boy going down the street and is shot at a parade. Something wrong with that picture. We're going to change that picture. And with us to discuss that ugly picture and how we can transform it is none other than our brother and friend, Brother Akbar McIntyre. Welcome to Religion Means Alive.
Thank you, sir. How are you?
I'm well. How are you? As we say in the street, I'm good.
But
I'm really
man,
bad.
Please.
You know why I'm bad and mad? My people are not free. So, Brother Akbar McIntyre, what do you say about the freedom, justice, and equality movement of our people, even in Paterson, New Jersey?
Well, what the people in Paterson, New Jersey has done in more ways than one, and it's like unbeknownst to them, is that they've settled for some of the most menial gifts that could ever be given to a people. You know, we've settled for jobs, we've settled for titles and positions, and we've settled for just looking prestigious in the face of other people, just being able to be in the picture with certain prestigious people, and we haven't never even thought of, you know, identifying the complex issues that we face on an everyday basis here in Patterson to a global humanitarian issue. You know, as it relates to the dense populated city that we live in, the density, widespread liquor stores. We live along the line of the second most contaminated river in the state of New Jersey. We have issues with homelessness, chronic unemployment, mass incarceration, and a high level of recidivism. And all of this is all of these things that has been able to, we can be able to tie these issues into a humanitarian, global humanitarian issue, and it's similar to some of the things that people are facing in third world countries. If you ride through the city of Patterson now, you in some areas of Patterson, we've done a documentary this week, you'll see that some parts of Patterson look like a war-torn country or some third world country that is not that's underdeveloped. And a lot of people have not been able to be able to tie this situation, condition that we're in, to a global humanitarian issue. And I think that's the problem. That's one of the problems that we have here in Patterson.
What can we do about that situation? We see Patterson, New Jersey, Newark, New Jersey, Camden, New Jersey, and yet we have a governor who thinks he should be the president of these United States based on Patterson, Newark, New Jersey, and even Jersey City. All of the school boards are controlled by the State Department of Education. What is your position, Brother Akbar McIntyre, on the education, which is something we should start on firstly, Robert?
Well, I think that is the number one institution that needs to be put on the fire. In Patterson, New Jersey, 60 has been the passing grade for our children. It's been the passing grade. They've been pushing our children out of school just being able to pass a 60. And we're talking about kids that don't even know how to read, man, how to read on a college level, and they're not being prepared for college activity, college-level education. They're not being prepared. They're not being prepared to compete in the global world, in the global economy. This dilapidated education that we have in Patterson is crazy, because you know it's not preparing our children, it's not teaching our children, it's not giving our children the adequate life skills that they need to be productive people. It's none of that. Well, is major complaints about the city of Patterson and the test scores and people not being able to score above a certain grade level. And this is like a large number of people that's being impacted by this. And I don't know what to say about that other than that we have to begin to hold these institutions accountable.
Brother Akbar, what is the name of your organization?
The name of my organization is Humble Beginnings Incorporated.
It's Why did you choose Humble Beginnings Incorporated?
Humble Beginnings Incorporated is because it is basically a product of my own personal experience. It's the brainchild of my own personal experience, my own personal transformation, and my own issues with the criminal justice system, and how I've been able to harness all of my frustrations, all of the negative energy that I had mustered up inside of me, and to begin to translate all of that into something positive, into kinetic energy that became in motion, where I began to change certain things based on me taking advantage of certain alternative measures that was afforded to me, thinking outside the box, and being more focused on developing myself as a human being, a productive member of society, more so than just a formerly incarcerated person. I didn't identify myself like that. I identify myself as a viable person that's competitive in the human race. I looked at myself in the human race, and so those were humble beginnings. I had to start over. I had to start over from scratch. I had to get humble. I had to get meek. You know, I had to go pray to Allah. I had to call on Allah for help. I had to have other people show me how to do things. You know, so I had to be humble in the process of doing that. So I start all over again. I was able to get a new start. And as I began to take part in different functions and began to exercise opportunities that was afforded to me, I took one step towards progress to the next step towards progress, the next step towards progress to this person that I've emerged into today. And I'm a positive person today. I'm a role model. I'm a model example of how it's done. So Humble Beginnings is actually my life experience. And so I wanted to take that and coin it and use it as a model for what I intend to do to help other individuals who may have faced the same similar issues that I faced in my life. And so Humble Beginnings is that marketable name that we use to show individuals that it can be done.
Well, I tell you one thing, being on the program with you, and you had an impressive, phenomenal power-changing, restorative justice narrative. You know what I like? I was so impressed with you. You said, I left a trail of blood, and therefore I felt an obligation to go back and clean up what I've done. You know, most young people, most older people, they always claim the victim, but they never claim victory. And it is not seen. I know you claim a victory. You claim a victory over your human soul, and it's a powerful testimony. What explains your transformation as opposed to millions of others who've gone through the criminal justice system, came out scarred, came out angered, came out with a sense that they would be another victimizer. But you had Minister Malcolm Shabazz like experience. What explains that type of experience?
Well, what I will say this is that for many, many years prior to, you know, getting involved with the wrong side of life, I always was a conscious person. I always had Islam. I had always had an Islamic identity, and I always prayed, and I always knew that what I was, though I was doing wrong, I always knew in my soul that Allah would be the one to guide me. And I began to see myself, you know, in accordance with what the Quran tells us, that Allah created man to be in the best of molds. And then he abased him to become the lowest of the low, except those who believe and do righteous deeds, for they should have a reward that would never fail. And that verse is what helped restore the energy inside of me to get up and make some changes in my life and begin to see myself in the light of the fitra, which is the natural order in which Allah, the Creator, created me in. So I had to shape my identity around all of that, in spite of, you know, my urges to be identified with what the world said I was or what the world articulated me as. I began to see myself in the light of what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said I was, and that was to strengthen me to retain my human dignity, my human self-worth, and reclaim my own right to self-determination. And that's the difference between me and those who come out bitter, because I was able to exercise an opportunity to transform my total self, my whole entire character, my whole development began to transform from inwardly into outwardly. I didn't concentrate on the outward appearance. I was concentrating on the tools and elements that defined me from within. And so in doing that, I was able to, you know, connect myself to higher spiritual principles, to where I began to know that eventually, though it may be feeling rough today, eventually after victory comes, after difficulty comes ease. And so I patted myself behind that, and I picked up that torch, and I pursued it.
You picked up a powerful torch, and you are lighting up the world with that torch. I like the idea of humble beginnings. Do you think the African-American community, including but not limited to the brothers who took the life of the young man. And I hope to come to your neighborhood, Amani Sexton. What do you think goes through the mind of a young African-American who just, in the days I was coming along, we would say he wasted this brother. He smoked him. He got his burner. See, all of those very impersonal terminologies actually render us powerless to the effects of what it is to take a human life, period, but to take a human life that looks like us. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I personally know, you know, and just having some self-awareness about myself as an individual, as a young African-American male growing up in the urban community, I know that most of all of those different things that we feel, you know, are all related to our self-image. The issues that we have with one another, whether it be from this side of town or that side of town, or up the hill or down the hill, most of it is related to self-hate. There's been a projection of the African-American male in particular that he is something negative. You understand? He's something ugly. He's a criminal. He's bad. And this is being perpetuated in all of our systems of influence as it relates to media, television, videos, music, all of which translate into us being able to see ourselves and what those vehicles of information is transferred to us. We begin to take on an identity and see ourselves in the light of a dehumanized individual, and we don't see nothing good about each other. So it's very easy for me to come into a room and stare at a brother who would in turn feel offensive because I looked at him. Because deep down inside, he believed that I'm looking at him in the same eyes of nothingness that he views himself. So he's offended. And so he's offended so much to the point that he's ready to shoot me. He's ready to fight me. He's ready to gang me. He's ready to jump on me. Because somewhere down inside, he has a low self-image that he thinks that the individual might think that I feel the same way about him. And it has a lot to do with the internal conflicts that's going on within himself, so much so that he has the inability to resolve conflicts with other people. And this is why we have so much widespread violence in the African-American community, because of the fact that we have yet to address the internal conflicts that's going on in our individual selves and the inability to resolve conflict as we relate and socialize with other people. And that's a major problem that has to be addressed. And that's one of the components that we have incorporated into our program service and as it relates to men and women transitioning from prison back into the community. That there's a curriculum in itself, in and of itself, it stands in and of itself alone, distinct from all other curriculums related to conflict resolution.
That sounds like what we're interested in. I have founded a movement called the Urban Peace Movement, and I hope that you will travel with me around to not just Patterson. Your words are needed throughout these United States. And I'm going to say publicly, I want you to host a show on urban peace. And I want to talk to you off the air about hosts. I'm offering you an hour each day on this show where you can come on and actually address many hours. I know you're busy, but I want you to hear, to hear from other young men who've actually transformed our lives. You had a very powerful testimony. I was moved. You know, we were in an auditorium where a lot of young people from all sides of life, young men with combs in their hair who was impervious to older men, sat down and listened to us. And you had the most powerful narrative for transforming their lives. And, I'm just caught up in your sincerity and your purity. What do you say about that?
Well, I'm just a vessel. Me personally, I see myself as a vessel. I've extended myself and dedicated my time, my energy, and my life to helping people, particularly young people, to help them begin to capture, you know, to begin to see themselves in the light of the human dignity, you know, in the light of self-worth, self-esteem, high morality, helping them to see themselves in the light of truth, as truthfully who you are. You know what I'm saying? Not to see yourself in the light of the delusional world, what the world fed you. And this is the issue. These are the issues. We have image problems. We have issues with us being able to articulate ourselves something other than who we are. We all are aspiring to be something other than who we are supposed to be, because the world has been conveying a message to us that we're supposed to be what they say that we should be, and all of this, all of which we, things that we're trying to aspire to be, is all commercialism. And we got to begin to think outside of that and begin to see ourselves outside of that, somebody else's commercial vision of ourselves, and to begin to see ourselves in the light of who we're supposed to be. This is what helps empower us. And once we get to understand and see ourselves for what we are supposed to be, to our families, to ourselves, to our communities, then we can begin to take upon the necessary steps to empower ourselves, all the things that we need to do to transform our conditions. We no longer become attached to somebody else's puppet strings. And we become free people, free-thinking people, operating with operating according to a position that is self-deserving for us to become greater people and transforming our whole entire lives into our neighborhoods and making our neighborhoods loving, caring places to be all over again.
Yes, that's exactly what can happen. I believe our neighborhood, we shouldn't have to leave and go to West Orange and South Orange and this place because our neighborhoods are not livable. How do you think we start transforming our neighborhoods where they are livable places?
I think we can start with what I'm doing. We can start with our most challenged population. I've begun to understand and seen and did my study and my research and noticed that the most challenged population in my city, and I'm sure that it could be the same in other city urban centers, is that the most challenged population in our city is the formerly incarcerated. People who are transitioning back to our community in dire need of services, either one, they don't know they exist, or two, they're not eligible for it because they may have committed a crime that the state legislator has decided that they're not going to be eligible for particular services that may assist them to get the services that they need to help transform their lives. I think we should start with that population of people first and give them a sense of purpose and begin to link them to the services that may help them to latch on to a better way of life. And I think that will make for better communities, better neighborhoods, and a whole entire better city, a transformed city, depending on, you know, what's available to them. I think that we need to start with the formerly incarcerated. And this is something that I've done. And one of the main reasons why I've organized with solid people and brought solid people to the table discussion and planning to begin to implement a strategy to how we can begin to empower that particular population, I mean male and female.
I'd like to suggest to our audience that what you are doing, we need to bring all the brothers who may be listening. I'm hoping that all you all will come to the Muslim convention that's going to be held Labor Day weekend. I hope we can get a busload of you all to come from Patterson, Mosque's convention, and that you might do a workshop called Restorative Justice. That's just a suggestion. Because what you're doing, if we go to Chicago, we go to Gary, with the power of the sword, nobody can deny your free credentials. I think you went through several universities, as one brother calls it. You've been through the crucible. You've been through the furnace. So nobody has to doubt your street creeds. You know, nobody has to doubt your redemptive creed. You see, nobody has to doubt your power of transformation. So as a direct result of that fact, of those facts, you have a powerful story. I'm going to ask you to stand by to while I make an announcement. You can join the conversation at 805-727-7013. 805-727-7013. My guest is Akbar McIntyre. Powerful name from the great city of Paterson, New Jersey, where the great heavyweight champion that was stolen his championship, none other than Reuben Hurricane Carter, many, many others. Now all you got to do is dial one on the phone, press one, and you will be listened to. We listen to all kinds of people. And certainly those of you who are listening. How are you funded? And tell us how people can plug into you.
Well, we are a 501c3 nonprofit organization. We're still in our development stage. I mean, in terms of our building, our location. Our location is on 159 Governor Street, Paterson, New Jersey, in the heart of the Fourth Ward, where all of the violence and the toughness is going on, right in the middle of it. And it's a very strategic location because it's right in the heart of all of the different challenges that we face. And one of the things that's so unique about the building is that it's a historical landmark once known as the Colored Man's Hall. It was the only facility in Paterson where the African-American community could congregate and organize their social functions. And our P.O. Box number is P.O. Box 3103, Paterson, New Jersey, 07509. And we're in the process of doing a fundraising initiative to begin to renovate our facility. And we're accepting contributions in the area of $150 and $25. And you can either take that and turn it into an annual contribution, or you can just give a one-time donation, $2,000, $3,000, maybe $4,000. You have a lot of things that has to be done to the building to bring it up to code and to make it a more friendly and welcoming facility. We have to make it handicap accessible because we intend to provide services to those who have handicaps and disabilities, and we're going to have a state-regulated service related to substance abuse, mental health, GED job training, job readiness, anger management, mental health issues related to conflict resolution, depression, things of that nature, and we're going to have a GED program in place, and we're going to be putting people and linking them to offender-friendly corporations where they can get jobs and begin to advocate for our clients on behalf of whatever their restrictions are. We're going to try to give them an opportunity to take alternative measures to solving their problems, and we're going to show them, and I'm going to model them in the area where they can begin to lead independent lives and eventually grow to change their own problems.
Yes. Again, do you have a telephone number where people can reach you at?
Sure, you can reach me at 973-876-3390, or you can email me at akbarmcintyre663@gmail.com, or you can write to us or send your contributions to P.O. Box 3103, Paterson, New Jersey, or you could come through every now and then and pay us a visit at 159 Governor Street in Paterson, New Jersey.
Yes, and you can join the conversation at 805-727-7013. We're speaking with Brother Akbar McIntyre. Go to your Facebook page and tell him that Brother Akbar McIntyre is on the air. And if you wish to listen to this broadcast, when we are finished, you can go to www.blogtalkradio.com/religionmeansalive and put in the date and you will be able to listen to the show. Now, let me ask you, there has been much made of the mass incarceration of men, but no one has addressed the mass incarceration of women and what that does to the deterioration of African-American families. Would you share anything about that with us?
Yeah, we are well aware that there's been an influx. There's been an influx of women in and out of the prison system. And for various reasons, and study has shown that a lot of those numbers are related to drug addiction, you know, drug crimes, nonviolent drug crimes, as well as nonviolent drug crimes is what impacts a lot of our men. I believe it's maybe over 60% of our men that are incarcerated right now in the United States of America are incarcerated for nonviolent drug offenses. And that is to say that eventually a lot of them will be coming home soon. And with that being known, they're going to be in need of services. You know, in some instances, legislation has been passed to restrict them from different services that may help them to get on their feet when they get out. But a lot of women are in prison. And this is why we've coined our program a Community Resource Center for Family Development, because we have a program curriculum in place to service men and women. And we understand the needs, you know, because grandma right now is the mother, is the head of the household now. Grandma has a large number of families in our community are being ran by grandma, you know, and some of the mothers and fathers, either incarcerated or in the street, you know, addictions and facing their addictions and things like that. But this is very, very important that there's issues with incarceration of women. It very much been much of a blow to our family structure in the urban community.
Yes, it has been. And I don't know how many are aware. Will you talk a little bit about the effects that incarceration has on children?
Wow, that's serious, because, you know, it's one of the reasons why a lot of our young people are displaced today. Very displaced, very bitter, very angry. You know, they're mad because their mom and fathers are not available to them. They're not getting all the nurturing care that they may need because of these things. And in more ways than one, you know, mass incarceration of African-American men and women has delivered a large blow to the family structure, you know, and that's true in and of itself. But, you know, what do we do is that we got to begin to develop programs and institutions that helps to restore these people when they transition back to our community, as opposed to just leaving them open and bare, you know, and without any outlets. So I think we have a very, very powerful position in the community, because and it's being welcomed by many people as we ride through the town. People are reaching out to us, calling us, and trying to see what is it that we can do to help them as we speak, you know. And people are looking forward to humble beginning, cutting the yellow tape, and opening our doors to begin to service people in our full scale. But unfortunately, right now, we got things that we have to do prior to that, you know, coming to fruition.
When do you think you will have a ribbon-cutting ceremony? And I certainly hope you will, excuse me, invite Religion Means Alive to come.
Well, I can see us being open and operating within the next 30 to 60 days, you know. In the next 30 to 60 days, I see us being open and full flesh. However, right now, what we've been doing is that we've been going to different shelters and facilities where some of the individuals are that have been recently released from prison, and have been doing assessments on some of these guys, and have been linking them to supported employment, the job training through Division of the Vocational Rehabilitation. I have an individual that has been working with us, Mr. Richard Hurd, who's been running that department, and we've been getting assessments on a lot of individuals and been linking them to, you know, so job training and stuff like things of that nature, and helping individuals, you know, get their identification and things like that, so they can be prepared to go look for jobs when they have to, you know, fill out applications and have to return over their identification and things of that nature. So we're doing some things in the community, you know.
Okay,
so
you seem to have had gotten an education formally. You speak well. You understand clinical psychology. You understand human services. Did you, while you were away, were you able to obtain education?
No, to be honest with you, it was when I got a blow to my me by the criminal justice system that, you know, where I began to think about doing this program is a personal issue that I had, with the criminal justice system and the New Jersey Department of Education. I had one time I received a job in 2009 to drive a medical transport van transporting handicapped children to school. Unfortunately, I was hired for the position, passed the drug screening, the aptitude test that they give you before you get the job. Unfortunately, a couple weeks later after being on the job, the Department of Education made a decision that I wasn't eligible to drive for this company because of a 21-year-old drug conviction. And from that point on, instead of allowing that bitterness to cripple me and impair my ability to function and move forward, I decided to become the leader that I wanted to see in other people, because I didn't see anyone in my area, a legislative of any sort, to help, to want to champion a cause of this magnitude to help level the playing field for individuals that was in the situation that I was in. So I decided to become the leader that I wanted to see in other people. So in the process of doing that, I drew up Humble Beginnings. What is it that I can do? What would I like to be done for me? And I began to translate that and say that this can also be cut across the spread to help other people as well. So I incorporated the organization, created a board of directors, you know, brought some individuals on to give me insight on how to bring the program together, to incorporate the program, to register with the state, to get the tax ID number, to apply for the 1023 form, and all those other things. In the process of doing that, I applied for County College and Passaic County Community College for Human Services. So simultaneously, I was going to school and developing a program at the same time. So I eventually graduated from the State County Community College, matriculated to Rutgers University in Newark, and I just recently graduated on May 18th from Rutgers University with my bachelor's in social work. And I'm in the process right now of pursuing my master's degree so I can be credentialed in the areas of program service. So at the end of the day, no one can ever come and claim Humble Beginnings for themselves. I can claim it and own it, not in the sense that I own and rule it, but the fact that I've claimed and owned the responsibility to restore hope in my community.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much, sir.
That's a powerful, 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 powerful narrative. Are we going to see the autobiography of Akbar McIntyre?
Well, I mean, seriously, I mean, I can speak of autobiography.
You know, we've heard the autobiography of Minister Malcolm, but you know what?
Right.
In 2015, we need more autobiographies of transformation and others. On the
right.
7th of January, probably in January, I mean, of June, I'm going to be a speaker at a brother that used to curb mail and is now gone from mail carrier to being a board certified physician.
Mm-hmm.
You know, man, took him 10 years to get a bachelor's degree. Then at 40, when most men would think about retirement, he went to medical school. I don't know
right.
your age.
I'll be 48 next Saturday. I
and
entered school.
Mahu Akbar for Brother Akbar McIntyre, who got his bachelor's at 48 years old. Most people at 48 years old are looking for 14 years in the future to retire. You're just getting started. And I know from the religion of Islam, that Bilal woke the prophet up late, and the prophet said, let's go ahead and make the salat. So the salat is analogous to the light. And here we are having a brother at 48 years old to walk down the aisle with a bachelor's degree from Rutgers University, not online university. You got it from a classroom. And excuse my language, but you bust your hump writing papers, competing with persons who perhaps come from privileged backgrounds. But you won. And this is my position, dear people. If we can win on the football field, and we are winning, if we can win on the basketball court, we are winning. Look at LeBron James. If we're winning on the golf course, and we are winning, look at Tiger Woods and others. We're winning wherever we are. Shouldn't we be able to win in the classroom? I don't care whether you're Ray Ray, whether you're Keisha, whether you don't have an ABE, adult basic education, a GED. You can transform yourselves. And if you got any argument, go in the ring with Akbar McIntyre, because he has shown that God is greater than any pain, any conflict you have. Tell Akbar McIntyre, will you comment on that and tell us what it like, what it felt like to walk down that aisle instead of walking down a perp walk?
Well, it was very, very powerful. You know, it was very, very powerful. And I was, yes, I was competitive in terms of, you know, being in the classroom with young people, younger than me, and I had to compete with, you know, writing papers. I had been on working a full-time job at the same time, happened to, you know, sneak research papers into the facility, you know, just to, you know, so I could study my papers and stuff like that, so I could be ready for my lessons. And I was able to maintain a 3.4 grade average. And, you know, just on, you know, pure energy, you know. So for the most part, I asserted myself. I went above and beyond what was necessary. You know, I extended myself in a major way, you know, towards my education. I didn't let anything get in my way. I didn't have anything discourage me. Nothing was able to discourage me. I was purpose-driven, focused, because I had a goal. I know that, you know, I have to go above and beyond when you want to own something, when you want to coin something, when you want to make changes, when you want to transform the world. You have to go above and beyond what is expected. People didn't expect that. You know, people didn't expect me to even be this at this age. People didn't even expect me to make it past 30 years old. I was often, you know, looked at as a person that wouldn't last long. I was predicted to have been died in the housing projects in Paterson, New Jersey, and the housing projects, predicted that I would get killed over a drug deal going bad. You know, I was predicted to not have lasted long, but to this day, Allah is the best of planets. And in knowing all these things, you know, my relationship with Allah has become more intensified, you know, because I understand that, you know, through all forms of hardship, there's ease after it. And inside the hardship itself is the solution to the problem. And I've been a soul searcher, a person who began to look deep within myself to see what is it that I can do, you know, to be different. What is it that I can do to prevent any of the other hardships that happened to me before from happening again? So I had to begin to make some decisions, change my way of thinking, change my value system, because that, you know, some of the twisted values that I held on to, I let it go. And basically what I'm saying is that I'm a model example of a true transformation. You know, you might have people that to this very day may not like me because I'm a truth bearer. They cannot understand why I'm the way I am, you know, and it's not that I'm a bad person. It's just that I'm an upstanding person. I'm a very passionate person. You know, and I'm a very serious, purpose-driven person. And I have a thing for helping the victim. I have a thing for helping downtrodden people. I have a thing for stepping up to a bully to tell a bully to leave the little guy alone. And I've been able to transform that all of that energy that I used to have in on the street level and convert it to the same energy that I intend to have as it relates to my clients that I'm going to serve that's going up against a bully system that's designed to keep them marginalized, subjugated to whatever they decide a person may need. And to teach people and show people that you can think outside the box and recreate your own reality and begin to pursue things from the angle that you believe you can do it from and show an example of how it can be done. And I'm a model example in Patterson. When I walk the streets of Patterson, people, they love me. They embrace me. It's not that I'm looking for prestige or anything like that. It's just that I see people and I can be just as needy as some of them. But the fact that I have discipline, you know, self-restraint, and all those different things that Allah instilled in us to be righteous and be upstanding, I've been able to exercise that, being to show people, man, that you can make a sacrifice. It's about making a sacrifice. And right now, one of the biggest sacrifices that I made is that I put a lot of energy in developing Humble Beginnings into crafting it to what it is today. And people are coming out of nowhere wanting to help, thinking that I'm struggling with this thing, and Allah sending people to help me. Allah sending people from all walks of life, cutting across all racial barriers, to sending people at the table of discussion to help me pull this thing off. Because we know that a program of this magnitude is very much needed in the heart of our community.
Now, I want to ask you also about the effect your transformation have had upon, one, your family, one, your neighbors, and what has been the effect on your old comrade in arms, your old street partners, or your old cellies?
Well, I still have some good relationships with all those guys I ran the streets with. Still have a relationship with them. You know, there's no big I, no little you. There's no... If you need it, I got it. If I have a dollar in my pocket, I give it to them. You know what I'm saying? If I have clothes, because I'm a vendor as well, if I have an extra T-shirt or something, I give it to them. If I have some extra pants, I give it to them. You know, but I know how to draw the line between being charitable and being a fool. You know, and I know how to draw the line with being a victim and being a victimizer. I know how to draw the line, and I know how to convey to some of these individuals that, you know, you can do it for yourself. You know, and I know how to say no. You know, I know how not to be, you know, something that, you know, that's looking down upon them. I'm not that type of person. I'm very much loving and caring. I still have a very good relationship with individuals that I know, and if I can help them in any kind of way, I've always extended myself to them. You know, and so it's just that. Right now, there's so many different things, man, you know, that people, feelings that people may have towards me. You know, you might have some that say they love me, you know, and some that just, you know, say they love me for whatever they can get from me at the time. In the meantime, you know, I don't even worry about all of that. I know that my duty and what I'm trying to accomplish is purely for the sake of Allah. Everything that I'm doing, everything that I'm striving to accomplish with Humble Beginnings and in my own personal life is really sincerely to seek the pleasure of Allah. And knowing that Allah is first, and knowing that Allah see me, though I may not be able to see him, I know that Allah see me. I know that if don't nobody else know, I know and Allah know. So I try to be mindful of my shortcomings and my faults. And I try to know that and continue to know that I'm under the watchful eye of the Lord of the worlds. And so I have to make sure that, you know, that my intentions are pure for the things that I do. When I set out to do something, I try to make sure that I'm doing it for all the right reasons, you know. And what better reason than to be pleasurable to Allah, you know, for the higher cause, you know, thinking outside the box, not the mundane, trivial, appetite type of thing. It's beyond my appetite. it's for the hereafter. It's for what lasts the longest, you know, the more meaningful outcome, you know. So this is where I'm at with it.
Great way of looking at it. You can join the conversation at 805-727-7013. Brother Akbar, will you please give us your email address, telephone number, and information, and also your website, so people can plug into you and themselves be restored?
Well, we're developing a website as we speak. However, you can email me at Akbar McIntyre, all lowercase letters, AKBARMCENTYRE 663@gmail.com. My telephone number is 973-876-3390. Page is Akbar McIntyre. And you can also log into our Facebook page, Humble Beginners Incorporated. You begin to see some of the video footage that we've shot, illustrating, demonstrating what our location facility looks like, you know, some of the different issues around the surrounding community. We have videos where I'm speaking on our program services, things that we're trying to accomplish, the goals that we have on a long-term basis for our organization. You can tune into the Facebook page, Home Begins Incorporated, and we're still growing, we're still developing, you know, and right now we need the support of the general public. We need the healthy contributions from generous people who have a heart for movements of this magnitude. And we're grateful that people are listening, people are watching us, you know. And we just hoping that it all come together. We have a facility, beautiful facility, you know, and we're grateful for that. That's a step in the right direction. We need to pull that off. Our goal is to make sure this building is up and running, operable, healthy, and welcoming for our clients. And we're reaching out. Purpose for us being on this show is to get the message out, you know, the message out about our organization, you know, get the message out about what's needed in the urban city of Paterson, New Jersey, you know, as it relates to violence, widespread violence, chronic unemployment, all these different things. Home Beginners is designed to address all those issues, you know, and if it can't address it directly from a structural perspective, we can begin to instill in individuals information, empower them, begin to take alternative measures to solving their own problems. This is what we need. We don't have no institutions that gives us an alternative. All the institutions in our community is designed to help us conform to the power structure. You know what I'm saying? Power structure, not with no disrespect, and in more ways than one, is not really serving us properly. We got to begin to think outside the box and begin to empower ourselves with begin to solve our own problems. And that's what I stand on. That's what we're premised on. And that's how we design Humble Beginnings. And we're going to show individuals the way to go and restore hope in these people. Very serious, very, very powerful.
What's been the response of the political class?
Well, I sat with the mayor last summer. I had the privilege to sit with the mayor. Beautiful. I thought it was a very, very powerful meeting. You know, he was very, very impressed with my proposal. You know, he was very, very impressed with the way I articulated the information. Unfortunately, if you're not a part of the clique or a part of the in crowd, your papers often get put to the bottom. But what I was able to find out, that they selected another organization to give some kind of grant to. And the word got around that some form or fashion that some people had cut and paste some of the information that was in my proposal to fit the fancy of their program. This is what I heard. I don't know if it's true or not, but it's possible because he never returned my proposal. You understand what I'm saying? But the fact remains that some word got back to me that whether he did it or not, I'm not accusing the mayor of anything foul or anything like that. But what I'm saying is that there's a possibility. The word is going around, and it's from a reliable person, that the possibility of them cutting and pasting some information from my program to fit the fancy of theirs has been done. But I sat down with the mayor, and they got back to me about, you know, what is it that the city of Patterson can do to help us up the ladder. And we came to the meeting in power with our own. We had our own tax exempt status. We had a facility. We have our own staff of clinicians, committed people that are prepared to go to work tomorrow. We can get the funding that we need to compensate. However, you know, we came with all of that, and just, they never got back to us. And I'm just saying that because I'm saying that because it's the truth, you know. And but we never gave up. I wasn't faint at heart. I wasn't, you know, discouraged in no kind of way. I kept it pushing. Kept it moving, and we and everything about our, you know, goals been intensified. We had from one phase to the next phase to the next phase. Now I can basically taste, the fruits of our success as we speak right now on this talk show. You know what I'm saying? Because people are coming alive. They begin to say, "Wow, these people are serious." Like, you know, you think that when somebody tells you something, it's a joke. It's people don't take you serious. No, but they see us. They see the steps that we're taking. You know, people in the community is coming up to us, shaking our hands and hugging us. You're about to do a great thing in this community. People in the Governor Street area, the Fourth Ward area, people that have always looked at us, you know, as people that they can rely on. You know, they see us for what we are, vanguards of the community. You know, and they see us for being elements of change. We have love for our people. We have love for our community. All of the brothers on my board, from my board members to some of the staff members and volunteers that come in to help assist with certain things are all people that are conscious and have a love for the community, an undying love for the community.
I'm on the air. Please, I'm on the air. Will you leave me?
Mommy needs the phone.
What phone?
That phone.
I'm on the phone. Don't you see me broadcasting?
All right.
You haven't been affected by the political class. What about the Muslims? I want to move with you are a practicing Muslim. What has been the support structure of the Muslim community for your program?
Well, you know, for the Muslim community, they're very, very much excited. A lot of the brothers in the masjid, some of the farm brothers from overseas, the various masjids that I do pray, I pray in all of the masjids in Patterson. I go to the African-American masjids. I go to the all the Palestinian masjids, the Bengali masjids. Wherever I'm at in the city of Patterson, it's time for prayer. I go to all the masjids. But mainly the brothers from the Islamic Center, Passaic County in Patterson, New Jersey, are very much on board with assisting me with the necessary funds that I need to renovate the building. And there's no issue with the fact that we're operating out of a Presbyterian church, a community building. It's none of that. It's just that what they're more concerned with is that, you know, the contract agreement that they have that will be more of a protection for the investment that they're going to make on our behalf. That's the only concern. Other than that, they're all on board. I've been speaking to a lot of brothers. I'm meeting with the president of the Islamic Center this week to decide, you know, what can they do to help facilitate, you know, or should I say, what can they do to help us, you know, get this program off the ground and launch this program. Very much excited about the program. A lot of the brothers are very proud of me and my accomplishments, you know, my education, my academic accomplishments. A lot of them are very proud of that. They want to see me succeed. They see the passion in my eyes, and they always supported me in the past. And so I've got a lot of good feelings about them supporting me. So right now it's just about putting all the necessary formal ducks in order so we can get the ball rolling.
What about the African-American Muslims? Have they been supported?
African-American Muslim community, you know, we're getting a lot of a lot of good positive feedback from them, you know, and a lot of brothers have been inviting them to the table. We also partnered with another organization, a Muslim organization, who wants to come into Patterson, New Jersey, and begin to provide a feeding effort. Muslims Against Hunger. They want to come into Paterson, New Jersey, and begin service in the community through Humble Beginnings. So basically give us a more of a positive look in the community, but doing some humanitarian things. And so and we intend to do that, provide those services in the Islamic Center of Paterson Mesaic right here in 245 Broadway. And I'm waiting for the Imam Rashad Muhammad to get back to me to decide whether that the green light has been given to be able to do that, you know, just outside the facility and feeding the community. So a lot of the different things that we're doing at Humble Beginnings is more holistic approach to helping and solving problems, you know, not just, you know, for individuals that are coming out of jail, but also to develop programs for individuals that have never been in jail before. They just got problems. They just got social problems. We want to link them to all those social services that they may need, empower themselves, coming to the table with a whole strategy, thinking outside the box, powering individuals with information that, you know, that would transform their situation, getting them to look at themselves for what they need to look at themselves as. And so they begin to say, you know, stand up to some of the things that bothers them, some of the skeletons that are in their own chest. I mean, to fight their own urges and begin to be, you know, disciplined, change their life around.
Where do you go from here?
Right now, today we just finished up a documentary. And it should be up and running within the next 24 to 40 hours. Powerful documentary about what Humble Beginnings is all about. We have many of my staff members, some of the people that we've partnered with. We've partnered with a brother, a Caucasian brother by the name of Richard Kutowski of Stonegate Brokerage Firm, who represents another nonprofit organization that is going to come into the city of Paterson and align himself with organizations that provide reentry services, and we're going to begin to provide jobs for individuals, you know, through some of those different businesses that they've developed that they're about to develop in the city of Paterson. They're going to tie it into the reentry form, you know, and begin to show people that things are happening, you know. So that in itself, you know, we have a lot of, you know, things that's going on in the documentary, and we're showing the blight, showing all the blight that's in the community, you know, all the hot spots. We drive around, showing the city in its purest form. The city is really under siege. You look at Paterson, it's very, very much under siege. It's like, wow, like you can see death in people, man. But I also see in people, man, if we can get a hold for some of them. Not all of them. Now, we know all of them is not going to come, but I know that there's some of them. And Allah in his infinite mercy spares whoever he chooses to spare. I think that those are the ones that we need to grab hold to, that's open and willing to make a change and come and get them services that will eventually be within the close proximity of where all this activity goes. And we understand that is a barrier to change, because some of those services are not within the proximity of people and where they live. You have access to resources within close proximity, more than likely people will begin to take those avenues. And that's one of the main reasons why we're so excited about opening and operating in the Fourth Ward, in the heart of Governor Street. We're surrounded by 10 different liquor stores going in 4 different directions. You know, you got dope houses on every corner. You got a liquor store. You got dens of iniquity all over the place. While at the same time, you got hardworking people that is like held hostage to their environment with no other alternative but to live in this thing, live in this type of environment. So we got to
begin to... I love that idea that they're held hostage by the environment. But you know what? God is greater. And Brother Alpha McIntyre is greater. And I know you are affecting people one person at a time, block by block, neighborhood by neighborhood, and you're affecting the hearts and the minds other people. What will you say to the ex-Akbars of the world, or the current Akbar McIntyres, who are locked up right now, maybe in the county jail is listening to us, maybe in the federal prison system is listening to us, maybe even in the somebody's listening to us on smartphone or by a correctional officer right there in the city of one of the federal prisons? What would you say?
Well, I would say this. Hold on to your principles. Hold on to your human dignity. And don't give that up. Don't compromise that. And continue to read. Continue to study. Open up a book and read it. I'm not talking about some old novels and hood novels and ghetto stories, how to be a better pimp and player. Do away with all that information. I think that I would like to encourage people to read real stuff, current events, study your situation, study your history, you know, study the history of the people who are in control of you. Hold on to your principles. Be patient. Look forward to doing something different. Look forward to doing something different with your life. Pray. You know what I'm saying? Pray and hope that things get better. When you come out, stay clean. Stay clean. Stay away from all that which you, you know, once brought you down. I know that's kind of hard because most individuals that are transitioning back to the community are transitioning back to the same places, some of the same neighborhoods, you know, in the same situation, same condition. We understand that. But hold on to your principles, brothers and sisters. That's just my advice to you.
Tell me, Brother Akbar, were you a Muslim when you were incarcerated?
Yes, the beautiful thing about that is that I accepted Islam when I was 12 years old. One of the things that I found unique about Islam is that I was able to compare a verse to something that was beaten into my head as a kid from the Bible. I began to, you know, it was beaten into my head when I was a kid that God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish but should have everlasting life. And then I heard Surah Ikhlas, and this is at 12 years old, said that he, Allah, is one. Allah is the eternal and absolute. He begets not, nor was he begotten, and there is none likened to him. When I heard that verse at 12 years old and compared it with what was beaten into my head by my Christian grandmother and my Christian aunt, I said, this makes sense. This makes sense to me. And I'm 12 years old. I said, this makes sense to me. The God that created that sun, the moon, stars, the universe, and got the whole world into the palm of his hand is in line with this. He could not have been born. He cannot be a man. So I had a problem with that concept. And I began to adopt this concept that God was greater and bigger than all things, that the Quran, the message that the Quran conveyed to my soul. And so by me embracing that, I began to open myself up to see that God is one. And in all truth, God is who he is. And he's bigger than all things. So that made rational sense to me. It appealed to my spirit and to my intellect. And so I began to moved to take my shahada at 12 years old. At 12 years old, I accepted Islam. However, it doesn't mean that I stayed there. Because as we grow and grow, we transform, we stray. But it's always been instilled in my heart that when I heard the message, as it was being conveyed from whatever imam we may have ran into, said that this has always been in my heart, always been in my heart. So as I grew older and older, I began to take on the responsibility that a Muslim is supposed to be take on. And though I made some mistakes in my life, always have found a way to get back on the right track and repent. And this is the beautiful thing about my life today is that as a man that is 20 years free from drugs, you know, I can actually say that the same whole thing is working for me. That I've chose the better life today, and it's all because of Allah and His infinite guidance, and His mercy, and His ability to change you from within. That causes me to be the person I am today.
I'm sorry. You missed the question. I was on mute. What were you saying to the brother who was a Muslim who said, "I have a Quran, but he got a bag of dope in his pocket"? He is a Muslim, or she's a Muslim, but she's abusing her husband.
Right.
But you know that the brother has sex addiction, and he says, "I'm a Muslim. I got the Quran. I got Muhammad." But yet we know clinical work knows that they also have a clinical issue. What can you say to that brother? What I call those of us who have suffered from urban leprosy. We're good Muslims, but we're doing things that we're not proud of.
Yeah, that's something. It's kind of ironic that you mentioned this, because I had a conversation with the other day about pointing, you know, particular alliance support to a faith. I mentioned that most of these individuals that we run across in the streets may know the Bible and the Quran better than some ministers and some imams. Can quote the hadiths, you know, might have the formal garb and might have the formal presentation, but the fact that he can't stop snorting dope doing that. Individuals don't have a religious problem. This problem is not religious. This problem is a clinical problem. This problem is moral in itself, but is related to a substance. That's a problem that has to be directly addressed from what the problem is. Before we begin to articulate the problem from a religious perspective, we begin to articulate it from a clinical perspective. And so that's what we do. You know, to identify our problems for what they really are. But any man can change. I encourage any person who have any struggles, whatever the struggles are, like try to, you know, a couple of bad deeds or something good. You know, keep doing something good. I can't judge you for Allah. Allah's best judge. You know, but I definitely encourage the person, you know, for myself. It's advice that I give myself. That I, when I find myself doing something that is shameful, try to, you know, copy it with something good. Or something
right.
Twice as good is the wrong that I've done. I try to do something good, double good, triple good. So Allah may give me the blessing for whatever He give me the blessing for. Allah knows best. You know, Allah knows best, and Allah is the best to judge you.
Yes. Well, we have certainly enjoyed Akbar McIntyre. I hope you will come back, my dear brother. Will you give us a closing statement? And if anybody wishes to add to or make comments, you have about 5 minutes. I'm going to give you five. Can you give us a 7-minute statement? You got 7 minutes, maybe longer. I'm enjoying this. Just share with our audience, parents, young people, and troubled people, and just people in general.
Well, what I will say is that, you know, I would ask for those who are generous, you know, to make a contribution to Humble Beginnings Incorporated. We are a startup program. We have a passion. We have the experienced people that we need to bring such a program like this to fruition. And we'd ask that you make your generous contributions out to Humble Beginnings Incorporated, P.O. Box 3103, Paterson, New Jersey, 888-346-07509. And I would ask that, you know, individuals far and wide, near and close, you know, make the contributions that you would like to give. You can donate those contributions to 159, have them delivered to 159 Governor Street, Paterson, New Jersey, 07501, at Akbar McIntyre's attention. Any kind of contributions, you've got desks, computers, anything you want to give, you know, to this cause, we look forward to that. We're accepting all of that. No support that deductible. We are a nonprofit organization, 501c3 tax exempt, and we look forward to serving our people. We look forward to getting help from the general public. We're looking forward to seeing, you know, a vehicle change. I think we have what it takes. I truly believe that. I you know, and sometimes we meet the charity, sometimes as we go on, all these different barracks that you have cut. That something is about my drive, adrenaline, not dying anything. Deep down in my heart, I know that greatest strength in our community lies in the form of prosperity. I think we can fix many of our brothers and sisters that are transforming, transitioning back to our community. I think we can make for a stronger neighborhood, a better voting block, leadership, for electing good leadership. I think we can make for our strength lies in our most challenged people. I think that those are worth being elected. I think that we have to do with people that are down. I think
we can invest in people.
I think we need to shut down some of these liquor stores. I think we should minimize the dope dens
and these outlets for vice, and begin to invest in virtues. Show people the way. Get people to understand that change is inevitable.
The change has to happen for any real life change in our first service. That internal change of our mind. A lot of people
don't change the condition of a people. I say they change the condition of their soul. And then the changing of their souls will allow for the changing that the limbs participate in. We begin to do different things. We begin to walk in a different direction. We get to speak a different language. We get to hear different things. We hear new things, things that are going to call us back to our life, save our life, save our situation. And I just want you to know that all we can do for ourselves is that we need to begin to invest in our own communities. That's what I believe. And with that being said, you know, I pray that Allah bless us all, bless our family, you know, bless our brothers that are incarcerated, you know, help them, guide them, strengthen them, give them a new response. We ask Allah to do all of them.
Thank you, my dear brother, Brother Akbar McIntyre of the New Humble Beginnings. We hope to have you back on the program again. You've been listening to another edition of Religion Means Alive. On tomorrow, we have Brother Imam Yusuf Abdul Salam. He will be live from Selma, Alabama. He will be the main speaker. I will be introducing him. And I would like for all of you to listen to Religion Means Alive. Until tomorrow at 3 o'clock, Religion Means Alive. Thank you.
Welcome.
Out for them. Come up and cut in the broadcast.